jurors were sent to deliberations in the salacious trial of Samantha Hall, nicknamed Femme Fatale in the tabloids.
Charged with first-degree murder, an arguably risky charge given that the victim, Troy Singer, died of injury during a lone sex act.
Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence.
Samantha Hall faces a murder conviction in the death of Troy Singer, her submissive lover she instructed to hang with a rope in her absence, finding her responsible for intent, negligence, or reasonable conduct will be the difference between a first-degree, manslaughter, or not guilty verdict. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress.
Samantha Hall is an intelligent woman. She graduated summa cum laude from Florida State. She began her own graphic design business and earned a handsome income, later managing her own investment portfolio. She's not dim. She was also extremely knowledgeable in the study of BDSM. Police found 6 books in her possession on rope play alone. 2 of those were about how to practice safely. You won't find the way Troy died anywhere in those books. She tied a knot, told him to hang himself with it while giving herself an alibi, and waited just the right amount of time before calling police. Enough to ensure he was dead, but still required emergency medical intervention. She wanted evidence compromised. She wanted to be far away from the scene. She wanted him gone. And she had enough control over Troy Singer to make him unwittingly do the job himself. She thought law enforcement wouldn't be smart enough to see through the accidental suicide. Just like she hopes you aren't smart enough to convict.
With all due respect to Miss Lardy, she's giving Samantha too much credit. Samantha and Troy were partners. They engaged in a consensual, sensual lifestyle. It's true. Samantha did know how to tie a knot correctly, which is what she did. She assembled a rig with a safe release mechanism. She told Troy to use that safe release mechanism to avoid injury. Troy is the one who failed to do so. And yes, that is a tragedy. Another tragedy is that in addition to facing the loss of a partner, Samantha now faces loss of her freedom. What happened to Troy Singer was a terrible accident, but Samantha is not to blame. People who engage in autoerotic asphyxiation assume risk. They assume responsibility for ensuring their own safety. It is an extremely dangerous practice, and Troy Singer knew that.
A strategy of the defense was to use the phrase autoerotic asphyxiation as much as possible, reinforcing the idea that Troy engaged in a solo act. The prosecution argued that Troy did not have agency and that his actions were controlled by Samantha Hall. A dossier was introduced into evidence that detailed the way Samantha told Troy what to do, what to say, and what to think. The state wanted to show jurors that Samantha's influence over Troy transcended that of a merely playful, kinky couple. They wanted to illustrate that when Samantha told Troy to hang himself, he had no choice.
The state combed through Troy's FetFinder account and all these public forums, and they compiled this dossier, and I'd like to start by reading Exhibit 51. Mm-hmm. This is from the FetFinder, this is from his FetFinder page, the Submissive Men's Group. So Troy says, "Today my dom told me to stand in the center of our playroom. She traced her hands along my body and told me to imagine she was tightening ropes there. She, quote, strung my legs together and arms tightly in front of me. She then said she was leaving the room, but she'd be back shortly, and I'd better not have moved. She remembered exactly the way I was tied, and she would check to make sure I'd remain still. When she left the room, I expected her to return shortly. I experienced nervousness and excitement, but after some time passed, I grew confused. Then my confusion turned to worry. Was she okay? Had she forgotten about me? More time passed, and my body grew extremely tired. My twisted arms became stiff and increasingly uncomfortable. I started feeling resentful. She said shortly, but the time seemed indeterminable. Nothing was keeping me in place but her words. As my patience wore thin, I thought of stopping this charade and walking out. I didn't. Her words had a stronger hold over me than any ropes. The thought of disappointing her overwhelmed my desire for relief. I stayed standing there while my joints stiffened, counting my breaths, hoping and willing her to re-enter the room. My blood sugar had dropped, and I moved in and out of lightheadedness. I knew hours were passing. I'd run out of thoughts beyond, come back to me, come back to me, come back to me, and I was almost moved to tears in one weak moment. When I finally heard her steps outside the door, my breath caught, and my heart started pounding. She entered the room and inspected my posture. Her hands slid down my arms and opened them. She brought me to the floor with her and cradled my head against her chest. She whispered, "I'm so proud of you," and the most exquisite sense of elation I've ever felt came over me. She is my world. I would do anything for her. I wish I could go back into that room and wait longer. In the comment section, so this is after Troy's entry, and then in the comment section below, one reader asked Troy how long he was waiting in the room, and Troy answered 5.5 hours.
Wow.
So I think from that we could gather that if she didn't come back for a week, he would have stayed there for a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And totally of his own choice, his own choosing.
Well, but also to his own physical detriment. I mean, she could leave him there for a month and he wouldn't come out. But he says in the middle of it, he says, her words had a stronger hold over me than any ropes, and it just shows the level of control that she had and that he would do anything that she said, no matter what it was, even if at the time he was thinking this is bad or dangerous. So, you know, conceivably, she could leave him in there for a month and he would die of starvation.
Or of dehydration.
About the idea of onus here, and yes, she has a certain level of control, but
not a certain level. She has complete control.
Complete dedication.
The following sentence after that sentence, though, is the thought of disappointing her overwhelmed my desire for relief. And then he later says, she is my world. I would do anything for her.
He is so dedicated to her. And that's on him.
It's more than dedication.
And that's on him. He chooses
control.
To give.
No. Yes, exactly. This is more like mind control.
You don't see this as, I mean, victim, Stockholm syndrome.
No, I don't. Mean, I mean, no, he wasn't continuously kept in a dark closet. He went out to work.
But he wouldn't go to work if she told him to stay in the closet. Yeah. He says, I would, you know, what we gather from that is if she said, don't move till I get back, he wouldn't go to work. He would get fired from his job. His life would fall apart.
Is that her fault or is that his?
That is her fault because she has control over the situation.
He chooses to give her that control.
Is he of the right state of mind?
Yeah.
Right.
I think he's brainwashed.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
I mean, so what is the, there's another exhibit that kind of goes to what you're talking about.
Before we move on, the martini segment. Could you read the martini segment? Because I think that reinforces what we're talking about.
Did you want to say something before?
I just wanted to, the quote that Steph went on to highlight is the thought of disappointing her overwhelmed my desire for relief. That actually tips me more towards what Carl's thinking, only because the word desire, he correlates to his wish for relief. And it's the thought of disappointing her that outweighs that. And it's not desire for her or for pleasing her. It's desire for relief from the situation she's put him in.
Exactly.
And that makes me really confused all of a sudden.
An exact quote from that. Yeah. I felt resentful.
Yeah.
So that doesn't speak to anything but relief from a situation that she's put him in a situation that I think is evident that he's basically saying, I can't control this. I can't do anything until she comes back.
Yeah.
And I think what we can infer from that is no matter what she tells him to do, he's going to do it without question until she stops it, which gets back to what we were talking about earlier with he's complicit in this. He agrees to it. You know, if she puts his life in danger, he's still going to do it. And I think that's on her. But can you read the martini email, the message, the martini entry? Because I feel like that also reinforces this again, that he really does not have any control. He does whatever she says. She has complete control. And that at least speaks to responsibility on her part for what happens to him. I think that we can debate intent. We can debate motive. But we have to recognize. I think Steph.
Wait, here.
No, just let me finish. I think we have to at least recognize that she's in a position where she is responsible for his well-being because he's shown that he can't look out for himself. We have to at least recognize that.
Can I just read?
Let's read it.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a post on FetFinder, a submissive group. Again, this is Troy posting this. My dom asked me to have a cold martini waiting to place in her hand when she walked in the door. She's been getting home at about 8:15, so at 8 o'clock I had a cold martini waiting. I held the handle so it would stay ice cold as long as possible. But as 8:15 neared, I worried it would be too warm. I went to the bar and fixed her a second martini just in case. The first went warm, and then so did the second. I made another martini, and then that went warm too. It was after 9 by then. I made a martini after martini, pouring the warm, undrunk vodka down the drain. When I neared the end of the bottle, it was almost 10:30, and I became fearful. After all my effort, my dom would return home to an empty glass. The thought of letting her down fills me with such self-contempt and sadness. But with just a few dregs left in the bottle, she walked in with a beaming smile in her face and gave me a warm kiss of gratitude. These are my favorite moments. She makes the simplest tasks into extraordinary accomplishments. I feel like a kid again, celebrating each milestone. Hashtag, I love my dom. P.S. I keep my bar stocked 2 bottles deep now. Smiley face, winky eye.
Mm-hmm. That's so disturbing.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder here if, you know, this whole relationship started off as kind of a game, and then just the fact that they were living this on a daily basis, not just part-time, that maybe it just kind of spiraled into the reality and neither of them maybe really realized it.
I think she realized it, but I think that's a good point overall.
But what makes you think that she realized it? She was giving him exactly what he wanted. And I totally see what you say, Steph, where if it became something that they integrated so completely into their personal lives, I mean, they were lifestyle practitioners. Mm-hmm. If it was so integrated, you can blur the lines of reality and, you know, play game, whatever. But if he did, then I imagine so did she. And none of that seems to say to me that she would have intentionally killed him, because that ends the game. That makes a totally different reality.
But I think what she said is important, is that maybe at some point it started out as a game. But even if you dispute her intent, I think you can recognize that this is way further than a game.
But is it fair to question how much she even knew she was putting him through?
Yeah, like, look at, hang on.
She's getting positive reinforcement from him.
He says he loves, he posts on public, you know, forums that he loves this.
But he also said he was fearful. In this one, he says he was fearful of her. And in the other one, he said that he basically said he didn't want to be standing in there anymore, but he knew he couldn't move. So to me, it's more about looking forward to the relief.
Can I also
from
point
being
out,
out of the situation?
That in the martini episode, he said he had self-contempt at the thought of disappointing her. That's not on her. That's on him. And
she
what
did
he
that to him.
But did she know the torture she was putting him through?
We heard in the testimony that she
does know what she's putting him through.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Stephanie, can you read Exhibit 67?
I think that clears that up. So now we can kind of get maybe Samantha's sort of mentality in this whole thing, because Exhibit 67 is Samantha's comments on a FetFinder group posting from another user. It says, question from anonymous user. Hi, I'm new to the femdom group, but not to the lifestyle. Smiley face. I've had a few subs before, but my new boy is a little into breath play, and I'm not used to that. He says every sub he knows is into breath play, which surprises me because that hasn't been my experience. Wondering if you ladies have found this to be true. And then Samantha responds, your previous subs were probably lying. Smiley face. If your new boy says he's a little into breath play, he's a lot into breath play. My sub is desperate for it. You'll learn to get off on the power it gives you.
You'll learn to get off
the power it gives you.
Come on.
It's about her.
Come on.
It's not about the sub. And this goes back to something from before when she said, this isn't about you. This isn't for your gratification. That's for mine. Here she is again saying, you'll get off on the power it gives you.
But then she does say, my sub is desperate for it.
And her in the text saying, this is for my gratification, not yours, that's her playing this part for Troy. That's what he wants to hear.
She's doing this for herself. I think that's clear. She says again, you'll learn to get off on the power it gives you. It's about power and control.
But is it fair to wonder that it's staying a game in her mind and it's becoming more than a game in his mind and she has no way of realizing
it? This is a lifestyle.
That's such
a
silly thing. She says, when I get back, I'll know how I tied you up, so I'll know if you got free. The ropes are imaginary. He's not actually.
So
what a silly thing. Like, of course, maybe she assumes that he did actually stretch
in the closet for 5 hours.
And maybe she doesn't know that.
That's extreme. Of course she knows that. And
maybe she doesn't.
Let's get back. Let's remember, this is a very intelligent, highly educated person who had a virtual library of books about this subject. So I don't think we can pretend like she might have not known this, she might have not known that. I think it's fair to assume she is an expert in this. She's an expert in what the sub feels, what the sub thinks. She knows what she's doing. So I think we have to look at her as a very knowledgeable expert person in this who knew exactly what she was doing.
But I think on the flip side of that, we have to assume he knew that too.
Exactly.
Because all those books were also in his house.
How can we assume that he knew that?
Because all of his character witnesses say he was a well-adjusted person, really good at his job.
Maybe
all
those he didn't have permission to read those books.
All those books were in his house.
Exactly.
Well, but we don't know that.
But we know that she has complete control.
I think she had such mind control over him that he was a seemingly a well-adjusted person out in the workplace and somewhat because she had to see him that way.
So, Janet,
so whatever she wanted from him is what he did.
So so you're right. She got everything she wanted from him.
Yeah.
Why the hell would she want to kill him then?
Because this is a fantasy of hers.
It's the ultimate
evidence
high.
It's the ultimate high.
It's the ultimate high.
But the other question is, if this type, I mean, this is a community. It's not just this isolated event. There is a community of doms and subs. I don't know how big it is, but obviously enough that there's entire forums dedicated to it. Obviously, lots of other people are in this type of relationship. Are all of them sick and twisted? Are all these subs out there, you know, not getting what they want? Are they all brainwashed? Are they all part of a consenting relationship?
Point. I think we need to establish if this one is.
Right. Exactly. But
look at the difference in the tone and how the questioner speaks in this back and forth and how she responds. The questioner, it seems more like kind of a regular person, like, hey, I'm into this stuff. Can you give me some advice? She says, I don't know if he's into it. It makes it seem like she's cautious, you know. And then if you look at her response, it's very aggressive. And she says, they're probably lying. You know, she's basically
saying,
there
was a smiley face.
Yes, but look at what she says. She's basically saying, don't listen to him. Just do it. It'll get you off.
Well, No.
She's saying listen to him.
Yeah,
she's saying that he's into breath play.
She's asking the question. Her sub brought up the issue of breath play, and her sub told her, the dominatrix, that every sub he knows is into breath play, which makes me question, this seems like a pretty common practice.
I mean, okay, the stats are that almost 1,000 people die every year from autoerotic asphyxiation. So how, just because she got him to this point, how is she responsible for that? Are these people who killed themselves because they took it too far, they're not tried for their own murder?
So
they chose to do it. He chose to do it.
Skydiving is dangerous, but if you
people
make a mistake skydiving, is the pilot culpable?
But that's different than somebody saying, I want you to jump out of a plane without a parachute. And them doing it, which is the relationship that they have.
She gave him a parachute.
He just wanted to pull that cord as late as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like she gave him a backpack with no chute in it.
ModCloth is the go-to source for unique women's fashion. They specialize in a broad range of styles, from quirky statement prints, vibrant colors, retro dresses, my favorite, classic silhouettes, and cool contemporary clothing. My favorite thing about ModCloth is how body positive they are. They believe fashion is for every body, size, and shape. That's why their exclusive line of apparel is offered in a full size range from XX small to 4X large, which makes finding the perfect fit so easy. And if you want advice with sizing or fit, or any kind of styling, you can get that for free from their team of mod stylists. Effortlessly transition between seasons with summer styles that stay perfectly preserved for fall by going to modcloth.com and using code DELIBERATIONS at checkout. ModCloth is giving our listeners a huge discount of 30% off any order $100 or more. That's modcloth.com with promo code Deliberations. The defense argued that Troy died of autoerotic asphyxiation, that he had a passion for asphyxiation before Samantha, that he asphyxiated of his own volition on the night of his death, and that he was in full control over his actions. Erotic asphyxiation is a human interest that goes back thousands of years. Dr. Nichols is a PhD in sociology.
We found evidence of strangulation games in primitive Celtic culture, as well as Eskimo and Mayan. There's a Mayan relic dated around 1000 AD that depicts a naked man with an erection and a rope around his neck.
Erotic asphyxiation is an exercise in letting go, giving yourself over, and in instilling total faith in your partner.
One in three men who die experience a sudden erection, so the historical link between sexuality and the risk of death is evident.
Exhilaration, dizziness, lowered inhibition.
There were entire clubs devoted to erotic asphyxiation in Victorian London. They were called Hanged Man Clubs.
As you're asphyxiated, you experience lightheadedness and giddiness. Your vision might start to blur. You might experience a fuzziness. That's pleasurable. When the oxygen returns to your brain, it's euphoric.
How is the experience different with a partner?
With a partner, it's a place of supreme safety. Being taken to a state of fear and returned to a state of peace, it's nurturing and it can be a powerful bonding experience.
Melanie Beretti. B-E-R-E-T-T-I.
Miss Beretti, what was your relationship with Troy Singer?
He was my ex-boyfriend.
And are you here today voluntarily?
I was subpoenaed.
Thank you. How did you meet Troy?
In college.
How long were you together?
4 years.
Was it a close relationship?
Yes.
I'm sorry for your loss. And I'm sorry for being so personal, but would you categorize yours as a dominant-submissive relationship?
No.
Did you explore bondage together?
No.
No tying one another up?
No. I know what bondage is.
I'm sorry. Was there any element of your personal time together that altered you to the fact that Troy identified as submissive?
He liked being restrained.
In bed? I'm sorry to intrude upon your privacy, Miss Beretti. Would you like some water?
No. And yes, in bed. Yes.
In what manner?
By the wrists and by the throat.
When you say restrained by the throat, do you mean with your hands?
Yes.
And did he want you to restrict his breath?
I loved him. I never pressed hard.
So whether you get it or not, does everyone at least understand what autoerotic asphyxiation is?
Yeah, or yes. Just erotic. I mean, yeah. Someone else doing it to you.
I didn't realize how prevalent this was in history. Maybe not prevalent, but I didn't realize how far back this went as far as documentation within artwork and everything. I mean, Dr. Nichols really brought up a lot of interesting points that I was not aware of before. I mean, these hanged man clubs and
So here's a question I have, is that when you do practice this, what are the safety protocols that you put in place so that you don't unfortunately end up as Troy did?
Individual. Each person has their own threshold. Each person has their preferred methods, be it rope or belt or another person.
Well, you mentioned safe words before, Andy, so I guess maybe that's something that they incorporated.
However, I think from what it sounds like with the lifestyle, the safe words aren't an option. Like, it's just you
well,
do
we
what
we don't
you're
know that. That was we're never brought up, and that actually kind of concerned me that the prosecution, or not the prosecution, that the defense never brought up this issue of safe words.
So, well, can you use a safe word when you're being choked?
Yeah.
Or maybe you can tap. I don't know.
Well, from what we know about the relationship, Troy was, if we're talking about Troy and Samantha, he's not allowed to question anything. He's not allowed to say no. He's not, right. he's only told, you have to do this and I'll stop it when I want. There was never any mention of a back and forth. It's only that he has to do it and he can't question it.
Well, so do we know if there were any safety protocols in the relationship besides the quick release?
It didn't sound like it, no.
But I don't know. I was very concerned about this issue of, you know, did he have a choice? But I have to tell you, Melanie's testimony was really interesting. The fact that Troy asked her to participate in breath?
Mm-hmm.
Breath play and strangling him. That was really, really interesting to me. That
in what
this
way?
Because it shows that he was engaging in this practice of his own volition before he even met Samantha. Like, he was asking a girlfriend who had nothing to do with the BDSM community to engage in these practices. Well, so obviously he was getting something out of it.
We're not arguing whether he was into it or not. We know he was into it. Here's my thing is that
well,
obviously,
it has been
Samantha.
Disputed, Carl. You were saying he had no choice in the matter, but here it makes it sound like...
Well, he has no choice because it fulfills something he needs. He's not saying, I want to go out and do this. He needs to do it. He was asking this other girl who's not even into it to do it.
That aside, Samantha is an educated woman. She knows what she's doing. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't the safe and logical conclusion be that she would have a safety protocol in place when doing this?
Which was, I guess, the knot.
Is this a safe thing to do when there's not a partner around?
That's a good question.
That's a very good point.
That's what I keep thinking about. She wasn't even there.
Right.
So how can that be safe? And how do we don't know if
and why
not
did she
really
command him to do it when she was gone?
Right. Yeah.
Right. You have to think about...
She wanted to see his eyes fill with fear, but she's not going to see
right.
him.
Right. Malicious at worst. Just...
Negligent.
At the least,
you have to think, because in this kind of relationship, the trust of the person having this done to them has to be that the person doing it is going to be responsible for their safety. Like Miss Baretti said, she said, "I loved him. I never pressed hard."
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's on her for how hard she pressed on his throat. If she accidentally pressed too hard, she could kill him. That's on her. That's not on him. Even if he's a willing participant. So the presumption of the responsibility has to go to the dominant. Wouldn't we all agree on that?
No, I disagree.
Making a knot, then you're giving him full control.
Yeah.
But if you're the one tying the knot, he didn't tie the knot. She did. Again, the responsibility that it's a correct knot and that you're safe is on you.
He also had these same books on knots and bondage in his house.
We don't know
that he was
that
educated
knowledge.
On them. We can't
oh,
assume
oh, you're
that.
Saying that Troy can't read now?
No.
We just
we
house.
Don't know if
he might not have allowed him to.
Right.
Well, then
Mindy, can you prove that he read those books?
But the other thing is
he had the opportunity
and he engaged in this practice.
But you can't prove that he did.
Right, but he engaged in this practice before meeting Samantha.
He engaged in light choking. I don't know if he did
this. This was just Melanie. We don't know if there was other people.
Exactly.
He did this with.
What if, can we just entertain the thought also that Samantha felt a little bit of pressure to keep him satisfied? I mean, if you're in a relationship where you have this lifestyle and you are expected to continuously, you know, keep up this charade, you try to find new ways to do it. And maybe this was the first time she had him do it remotely, and unfortunately it didn't end well.
That's entirely possible. I propose, with everyone's blessing, we take an informal end of day one wrap up vote. So if everyone's agreeable, just jot down where you stand right now, turn the paper into me, I'll read it off. And we'll know where we stand going into tomorrow.
But what are
three.
We voting on in particular? Are you voting on murder in particular?
No, just
guilty
just,
or not guilty.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or guilty undecided.
Guilty or not guilty.
Or
great.
Undecided.
Yeah, I got four, before, I got five.
Before we get to specifics,
six.
We need to at least figure out is did she do it? Did she kill him?
Let's read the votes and see where we stand.
Yeah.
Guilty. Guilty. Not guilty. Guilty. Undecided. And not guilty. So that's 3 guilty, 2 not guilty, and 1 undecided.
Next time on Deliberations.
Mistress, today I thought of you at work.
Sometimes called money slave or cash piggy.
So, let's talk about motive.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and launches as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast, jury, Macklin McGlahey, Sam Britton, Sierra Marks, Lindsay Rousseau, Adam El-Sharkawi, and Alice Bowden. Courtroom, Allison Brown, Michael Cortez, David Ballard, Joe Cliff Thompson, and Christina Stolb. You can check them out in our cast gallery at deliberationspod.com. Theme music by Mellow Knights. Some music in this season is sourced from incompetech.com. If you like this podcast, please subscribe. And the most important thing you can do to support us right now is to leave a review on iTunes. We're really trying to establish ourselves and come back for a second season, and that helps us so much more than you realize. For those who have already reviewed, thank you. Sincerely. I am moved and beyond grateful by all the love and encouragement this podcast is receiving. I am more touched than I'm able to express without crying, which is about to happen. So thank you, and we'll see you next week.